Good morning, Chair. Would you like to introduce your team you have worked with?
Good morning. I'd like to introduce my colleagues, Don Gray, Deputy Director General for Policy, Yvonne Bruton, the Chief Advisor for Industrial Relations, and Michael Peters from Don Policy Team.
Sure.
Welcome. We have a bit over 20 minutes, so over to you, and hopefully you've got time for questions, thanks.
And Don's going to start off with some opening remarks, and then afterwards we'll take questions from the committee.
Thank you, Chair and committee, and I'd just like to acknowledge the people who work in the sector, the people who've been presenting to you. Health outcomes and service quality across the board, including in the aged care sector, are improving against the background of tight financial situation, and it's a challenging area for the Ministry of Health to work in, as it is for the people who work in the sector. New Zealanders are living longer, spending longer in good health, but there are significant challenges with the ageing of the population, and I think that the Nurses Association petition covers some of that. We believe that aged residential care sector suits New Zealand as well, but there are some exceptions. The Auditor General's report in 2009 entitled Effectiveness of Arrangements to check the standard of services provided by rest homes, gave some examples and identified areas where audit and certification practices were inconsistent and led to poor quality. The Auditor General followed up with a report earlier this year in September and concluded overall that recommendations on improvements made in the 2009 report had been met. She similarly made a report in 2011 on home-based support services for older people and found that generally home-based services appear to be delivering adequately. It's an area of challenge with the ageing of the population, and we have activity underway in terms of ensuring that provisions are future-proofed. We are represented on a joint aged residential care steering group, which is chaired by representatives of DHBs and aged residential care providers. That group commissioned the Grant Thornton report that's already been referred to, and has set forward work to ensure that we as a society are addressing the aging population. We're working with DHBs and representatives to implement recommendations of that review, which is something that can be done quickly, so it's a piece of long-term focus and work. These include updating the demand model for aged residential care on a regional basis and providing appropriate pricing and policy settings. We meet regularly with DHBs, consumers and provider representatives on key issues affecting older people and use this to inform ongoing policy work and service of the Minister. And we also work across other agencies, government agencies, where we're actively participating in the Ministry of Social Development, who've got a key interest in the ageing of the population as well. We spend in New Zealand a higher amount on aged care than the OECD average. So in 2008, the OECD reported that we spent about the New Zealand government spent about 1.3% of gross domestic product on long-term care, and that compares favourably with other countries like Germany, Australia and Canada, and spends a bit more. We spend expenditure in aged care has increased from $1.1 billion in 2007 to $1.5 billion in 2012. So it's an area where government has been investing increasing amounts of money. So that's a 30% increase over that period of time. In the last two budgets, there's been special attention paid, for example, to dementia care, which is one of the pressing issues for the future. Additional funding of $11 million. Was put in the 2011 budget and further $10 million in the 2012 budget. So within the Ministry of Government, we're working on the pressures that, that the ageing of the population present. We consider that staffing levels and skills are essential in the aged care sector and are essential to quality care. there were prerequisite, and the Age Residential Care Agreement, the ARC agreement, entered into between DHBs and the residential, each aged residential care facility, requires facility operators to provide sufficient staff to meet health and personal needs of all residents at all times. They're required to have a personalised care plan for residents, and I understand that's overseen by a nurse. This is developed and documented by a registered nurse based on an assessment by that nurse. Care workers implement these plans must do so under supervision of a registered nurse and must be trained in aspects of care they're required to undertake. There are minimum staffing requirements stipulated in the ARC Services Agreement. Basic rest home level care, for example, requires a minimum of two staff for up to 30 residents. The New Zealand Handbook indicators for safe staff, safe aged care and dementia care for consumers, 2005, was referred to by people prior to us. That's linked into the ARC agreement. So whilst there's not specific detail in the agreement, there is connection to the standards, which sits in a separate document. And aged residential care providers are audited regularly against the ARC service agreement. I think that I'll probably leave it there and I've got an opportunity for questions because we could go into detail on the agreement.
Fine. Is there
another
colleague from
the
commission?
No. Take questions.
I think that's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. John, good afternoon and to you, Jean. Good to see you. Thank you for being here. Thank you, John, for that trot through a number of things that are happening. Do we have a comprehensive strategy to address the issue of the impending demographic in New Zealand? Do we have a health strategy aimed at priorities for and phasing in of ways of meeting the needs of an increasingly ageing population?
I think that the, as indicated in the minutes, an area where there's ongoing work. So there is a strategy called ageing.
Ageing
New Zealand is a health. There isn't one, but there is work that's going on related to service demands, both immediately and what the model of services are in the future. It fits across the whole population, not just the aged population, but I mean the ageing of the population is, we notice the greying of it at first, but it affects the whole population. And one of the things around the government's better, sooner, more convenient service and clinical integration, all are steps towards ensuring we've got an effective health service and aged care service for the growing of the population.
Okay, thank you. Is the Ministry advising the Minister on how to implement the recommendations in this report, given that it's clear that there are going to be more of us and we're going to need more of them, and it's entirely predictable?
It is entirely predictable, and the Ministry, alongside every other government department, is developing or working on workforce strategies which go out into the future. In answer to your question, we're advising the Minister in respect of that report, but all of the other pieces of information in the report that we work on to ensure a sustainable health sector going forward. So that's, that provides information and insights that help us with the picture.
Can I just ask one third question? Thank you for that. Clearly this is going to be something that will outlive any government, and therefore it would be a good idea if parties could agree on the on recommendations and on aims for the future going forward in this area. And I think that's as much a note to self as it is a note to government, quite frankly. But the other thing I wanted to ask, because I'm genuinely unsure, the role of the Ministry of Health in standardising qualifications and intervening in that area to set out what kinds of skills are required What kinds of skills will be required in the future if we're looking at a higher number of cases of dementia, and what kind of relationship the ministry has with the RTO that might assist get past some of these roadblocks and this plethora of things going on, and arrive at an aged care set of qualifications.
I'll open and then I'll hand it on our colleagues to provide out a bit more detail. I mean, it is an area where one nationally recognised set of standards and training program is desirable, and there's good progress being made on that, we believe, which isn't to discount the points that were made by the previous people in front of you. The ART Services Agreement requires all care workers to undergo training related to a care of people. Much of the care occurs in the workplace rather than in a formal classroom setting, and reference has already been made to Career Force. They're working to have current requirements within the ART Services Agreement including a number of competencies. So the aim the standard that's being aimed for are level 2 foundation skills and level 3 national certificate. Career Force has introduced a validation process from the 1st of October this year to that end, and the aim of that is to enable people who get trained in one workplace, to be able to be recognised for the skills that they've picked up through that and for them to be portable.
The ARC Services Agreement does have a common set of core competencies, and that they've been in place for some time. That agreement gets revised every year, and every year the DHBs and the providers look at that to make sure it's still relevant. I guess the difference between what we're saying and what the previous speakers are saying is that these competencies haven't been formalised at this point into a national certificate, but they are similar. The competencies are similar to those that are available in the level 2 qualification. And I think this is why Career Force is reasonably happy to validate those in-house training courses to allow people to get certified without having to go through the proper formal training process.
If I could just add further, the Ministry has been working closely with Career Force and both through the Health of Older People unit but also through Health Workforce New Zealand. So there is a work program that is specifically looking at training for the unregulated workforce. And Career Force is the ITO that has the training facilities for aged care in particular in health. They have, as other people have mentioned, have recently launched an assessment program whereby they will visit rest homes that, because a large proportion of rest homes currently provide in-house training, they will assess that in-house training, identify any gaps that would be needed to be covered in order to take the current training up to either level 2 foundation skills or level 3 core competencies, and then they will be prepared to validate the in-house training, which will have the effect of overcoming the problem that caregivers currently have of not having a portable qualification. And so I think one of the previous speakers mentioned that if they move from their current rest home, they can't actually take the qualification with them. So if it's validated, it'll be validated to the national certificate levels, and that it will mean that it will become a portable qualification.
We know that the highest rates of pay are in the DHB equivalent facilities. That is a generalisation that not-for-profits pay more than the for-profit sector. And I know from representations I've had in the last year from the not-for-profit sector that we're exiting this sector because they don't think they can get the adequate return to maintain their facilities whilst appropriately paying their staff. which worries me in the long term. If we are reliant totally on the private sector, the costs will increase to taxpayers over time. It seems to me that there's a tension here between the amount that the rest home care provider gets for providing services and the return that they get on the capital that they've got invested in facilities. And I'm not convinced that we've got that right yet in New Zealand. And I know that it's quite complex because the private sector are extracting profits also from private payments that have been made by people that are contributing to the cost of their own accommodation, whether it's through a tithe that's taken when they die and you go to a rest home and it's unsold, or whether it's a premium that's taken when they first move in, or whether it's a rental payment while they're there. And I'm wondering if you could tell me what work has been done to ensure that we are providing an adequate return on capital to the not-for-profits so that they can maintain their facilities whilst providing decent terms and conditions to the people that they're employing there, and what's also being done to differentiate between the payments that are going to the private care providers. Some of that payment is being taken as a return on capital in a way that the not-for-profits aren't willing to do, quite rightly. And I don't think that we've got a handle on that in New Zealand. Could you tell me whether, one, you think that there is an issue there, and two, what work's being done to resolve it?
Well, I think I recognised the tension and the two points that you're raising. In terms of whether there's any work being done in terms of differentiating between different providers, the short answer at this point in time, there isn't any on the work program. But I think that we do recognise and we do see that tension. And part of that is actually when we look at the quality of care that's been provided. So we're largely looking for what the outcome that we see, particularly from when we have audits, both routine and sport audits. And the focus there is actually more about, you know, are the patients and the residents actually getting the appropriate service dedication within the funding that we provide them. And you know, for exceptional cases, by and large, the audits are telling us that they are exceptional cases, and there are recent ones that have come across us. So, which leaves us a question around, is it a question that the funding is not enough, or is it that the funding is not actually being used properly? So before we saw in the ministry start commissioning a whole bunch of work around a different funding model or a different way of actually how do we pay different providers, I think that the audits themselves perhaps might give us some more indication.
Could I suggest, I don't think that's right. I think it's already obvious that you've got a long-term trend here that's hollowing out the not-for-profits. But unless you become more sophisticated in your funding model, which differentiates between return on capital, private benefit in respect of the standard of accommodation that is above the standard which the government can afford to bear. And that's one of the things here. Of course everyone wants to move into a rest home that's got a swimming pool and higher standard of care. The government's not going to be able to afford that for everyone. So what is it that you're going to pay for capital? What is it that you're going to expect people privately to pay? And what is it that you're going to pay the not-for-profits to return for capital? I can't see you getting this right until you're a bit more sophisticated. This might be me. And I have thought about the issues.
Andrew?
I just wanted to cover I think Don made a point about the safe status of the I just want to understand what the status is of the guidance, if you like, or what you described as a safe staff. Did I hear it correctly? You talked about a minimum of 2 staff for 30 residents, is that correct?
I can respond to that. That is actually a requirement. It's not a guideline. That's required through the age-related residential care services agreement. Those staff have to be overseen or supervised at rest home level care. They don't have to be directly supervised on a day-to-day basis, but a registered nurse certainly has to assess the needs of a resident and produce a care plan which the care assistants carry out. It's quite important to note that there are different levels of care in aged residential care services. There's a basic rest home care, there's hospital level care, psychogeriatric and dementia care, and at each level those staffing levels alter. For example, for hospital level residential care, a registered nurse has to be on site all the time. For rest home care, they don't have to be, they simply have to be overseeing the staff and developing care plans.
Thank you.
Isn't there a legend? John, speaking order.
Barbara, and then Kevin, and then you, John. Didn't much prize after that. Okay, thank you very much. Can you please tell me what the role of the Minister of Health should be in trying to deliver pay parity and similar conditions between the rest homes and the VHP establishments? And what are you going to do to try and resolve this issue?
I think one of the things we've known in this area is that most of a very, very small number of DHDs actually have rest homes. So the pay parity, when you're having a look at it, it's not like there's a big DHD workforce that's in rest homes. It's very small. The issue of pay parity is a complicated thing. I'm an expert in this in terms of job evaluation. What are the comparators?
One of the previous speakers referred to what had happened in early childhood education, and it is a similar situation. I would just note that was a program or a campaign that took place over a large number of years, and it was the workers in the sector who campaigned and took it upon themselves to conduct job evaluations, which are really important to make sure that jobs of similar skill and level and qualifications are being compared, so that in the end you're comparing apples with apples. Now, that work hasn't been done at this stage, and it's the employer is the has a role in that as well. The ministry is not the employer. In the early childhood example, the Ministry of Education were not involved in the job evaluation exercises, and similarly it's not appropriate for the Ministry of Health to be involved in those job evaluation exercises apart from maybe in a facilitative type role, but it is part of the really important work that would need to happen for any convincing case to be progressed around pay parity
and conditions.
Yeah,
I'm not sure which one to go with because you probably won't give me more than
one.
I guess I have many questions arising out of what you've said today and also your document. And so perhaps I'll put some of those in writing. But maybe if I just pick up on that last point. Are we seriously being told by the Ministry today that there may be a justifiable gap between the wages being paid to nursing physicians and healthcare assistants in the aged care sector and in DHBs? Is that seriously what you're telling us?
I think what we're telling you is that there needs to be some job evaluation work done because there are a large number of positions in the aged care industry, as both in residential care and in DHBs.
And you're also telling us that the Ministry has no role in ensuring that occurs.
No, I'm saying that there, until some job evaluation work is done, it is not clear what the disparity might be. There is no doubt there are some differences between people that are employed in DHBs and people that are employed in the aged care, in the private sector aged care industry. It is a matter between employers and employees. The ministry is not the employer.
Yeah. As a follow-up to that, obviously the information that of all the aged care workforce, only 1% is in the DHBs, the rest are in the private sector. Mm-hmm. Would that be a correct statement or thereabouts?
Yes, that's correct. It's our understanding.
Yeah. So it's mainly in a private employer situation.
In aged care.
An HCA in aged care
is probably going to be doing similar through what's
healthcare assistance. This is nowhere near as complicated as nurses going for pay parity with police and teachers. And we've done that. Mm. We've done that. So this is a much closer scope of practice that we're talking about. I absolutely understand your problem with the fact that the most of the people are not employed by the ministry or by DHBs. I understand that, but this is not anywhere near as complex an exercise to take an HCA in a privately run system and put them against an HCA run in a DHB, working in a DHB run system. So this is not beyond the wit of players who wish to be involved to do those job evaluations. But having said that, it's also not beyond the wit of the ministry to push that along.
Final question, John, did you have a question there?
Yeah, I was wanting to come back to the two issues. The first one is getting tangled with the return on capital. The Ministry of Health must know what typically costs the DHB to put someone on a hospital bed for 24 hours. And if you know that, then you would know what it's going to cost in the rest home, completely free of advanced care, all the hospital people in the rest home. So I can't see that's complicated. The next bit of it about pay parity, someone in Lincoln is not going to get the same salary as someone in White Crow or in Denver because they're different markets. And from what I see actually going on in the area, and I did that, I go sit in the West Coast, not retirement village, it seemed to me that each community has got a range of people with skills and a range of people who want to work and who don't want to work and a range of alternative job offers. And so it seems to me, even in small towns, you've got a market operating, and people can choose to go and work where they don't have to.
We killed those arguments in 2004, John. A nurse is a nurse is a nurse. A healthcare system is a healthcare system.
I'm not talking about definitions of workers. I'm talking about work availability and people who are prepared to go and work at that sort of rate. And the fact is, in small provincial towns, where there aren't a lot of job options, people are prepared to go and work for these rates. And basically, that's the guts of the problem. When you come along and you say, I'm not being paid enough to do this amount of work.
And the question back is that fair? And we decided a long time ago that it wasn't. We don't have the skills.
Are they funded on a regional basis?
No.
They are funded, sorry.
See, exactly when you're talking about the not-for-profit organisation, that's all disappeared because, from the view of those organisations, they don't have enough money from the government to make a viable operation continue to work. So they got out. Commercial operators come in and take them and stuff over. Whether they made money when they bought them or not, I have no idea. What I'm trying to say is that the whole system operates in the market, and people complain of it, seem to be complaining nice. The ones without a base still there, without a qualification. If you've got a nurse and you've got to have a nurse on duty, quite clear. This is a requirement to be a registered nurse, that's what you pay them. That's not the issue, it seems to me. It seems to be an issue the next layer down, where you're basically employing the people who work all by day, but don't have necessarily that increased skill level or qualification that justifies pay at a higher level.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Excuse me, can I say something? As a caregiver, well, I think by everybody, as a caregiver, we give out medication.
Yes.
We do BGLs. People need more things. We give out more things. We also clean up people's backsides. For what? $30 an hour? Come on, people. We are doing nurses' jobs.
Well,
and we are doing nurses' jobs because the nurses won't do it because they give them to caregivers.
That's what we have to put up with. So if you think I'm worth $13, we'll keep paying you $13, but I reckon I'm worth more than that. And all these other ladies here are worth less than that. Because we care for your elderly. And that's the big thing. We care for those elderly, and we have a passion for those elderly kids. And we want to give them the best care that we can as individuals.
And if you set your standards right now, when you get into our aged care facilities, you will be looked after just as well by all these lovely people. Think about how you want to be looked after. Set the standard.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the comments from the audience. We are closed off and we'll ask you to join us for our consideration.